to questions and answers, and we want to pick up where we left off. Of course, we've had some other ones relating to questions and answers in the last few weeks on some of the larger topics. I am glad to see people sitting a little closer to the front this morning. It just looked, everybody was so far back. And I thought, wow, there's going to be a mad scramble for those back seats with visitors next week. So you might consider sitting a little closer so that everybody has enough room. The back pews can only hold so many people. All right. This evening, we want to mention that, first of all, we have a number of questions. That's good. We have more than we can get to this evening, but that's good that we have so many that are being put into the box. And we'll get to each one of those as quickly as we can. 3 weeks from tonight, we plan to answer some questions on the book of Revelation. And we also want to discuss civil disobedience, a question concerning that. And then there are a number of questions, less time-consuming, but nonetheless important. However, don't be discouraged by the logjam that we currently have. Go ahead and ask more questions. Before we get to the subject of Christian rock music this evening, I wanted to add a little bit left over from what we talked about last month on instrumental music. I mentioned that in the three Revelation passages, it did not mention playing and singing together. But even if it did, it would still not authorize what we do on earth now, because that would be in heaven. One might infer that the playing of harps and the singing were being done together from the three passages, the one that was just read for us, and Revelation 5, 8, and 9, and Revelation 15, 2, and 3. They all mention having the golden harps, and then in the next verse, it mentions that they sang. And so one might legitimately infer that in all these instances, since harps were mentioned, and the next verse says that they sang, that they were singing with the harps. And that, of course, is possible. But in none of these three cases is it expressed, as we saw last month in 2 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 13. There, there was not just an implication. There is stated factually what was going on. Remember, that verse again said that indeed it came to pass when the trumpeters and singers were as one to make one sound to be heard in praising and thanking the Lord, and when they lifted up their voice with the trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praise the Lord, saying, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever, that the house of the Lord, was filled with a cloud. Now, there can't be any doubt as to what is happening there. The two, the instruments and the human voices were as one. And God had authorized that in the Old Testament. Well, somebody might say, well, does it always have to spell it out like this? No, it doesn't have to spell it out that way. That does make it clearer. But the fact that it is not so specified could be significant. And so we want to ask, why is that? Because Revelation is a book of symbols, and the harps could simply refer to that which is melodious. It could refer to the melody when they did sing. Consider the text that we read. Were there literally 144,000 standing on Mount Zion? And is that all that are going to be saved? Was their name literally written on their foreheads? Are they all playing literal harps? Or does the sound heard represent melody? Are only 144,000 going to be redeemed from the earth? And will they all be males? What about the females? It says they were all males. And will all the males only, the men be virgins that are saved? I see all of these are in the passage, and all of these are for a particular purpose to convey a particular truth, but we don't understand them necessarily to be literal. And so we need to be careful in a passage full of symbols that we don't make part of it literal and part of it spiritual. This is where the Jehovah's Witnesses got in trouble by insisting there's only going to be 144,000 in heaven. Well, back in 1920, when there weren't very many Jehovah's Witnesses, that was fine. But now that there have been hundreds of thousands of Jehovah's Witnesses, this isn't working out too well. So they came up with something else. Those are going to be in heaven. The rest are going to live on a renovated earth, and that's going to be even better. That's how they try to console themselves for missing heaven. Living on the renovated earth is going to be better. So you can get in trouble in these ways, and we need to avoid that. So that's just a few things added to last month. Now, we want to talk about a related subject, and that is Christian rock music. Is that a blessing or blasphemy? A little over a week ago, I received the following email from one of our members. I'm going to keep this anonymous. Should Christians go to Christian rock concerts? There is one coming up called Rock the Universe, and there will be performers with instruments singing worship types songs. Now, I gave a very brief answer since it was email. I'm going to give you the longer answer in just a moment. You might wish I'd have just stopped. But anyway, the short answer is this. Absolutely not. Here is what you might mention to someone who asks. Number one, is it appropriate to make God and spiritual matters an object of entertainment? If it is wrong for us to add unauthorized instruments of music to our worship, why is it acceptable for other people to do so? In other words, is it acceptable to God for those in denominations to use instruments in their worship? Number three, so here we have two wrong things. People adding instruments, which God did not authorize, and doing so for a performance to entertain people rather than offering worship to God in spirit and in truth. Thus, what is being done is not in spirit or in truth. It's not in spirit because they have taken worship and made it entertainment. And it's not in truth because they added what is not authorized to the worship. So why would we want to engage in something that is neither in spirit nor in truth? And why would we want to endorse that or promote that? If they are doing what is not acceptable to God and not authorized, then why would a Christian want to listen to a CD or that which does not please God? Yes, secular music that dishonors God and his moral principles is also wrong. There's no question about that. But for these reasons, we never, as a congregation or individually, advertise or endorse such events as Rock the Universe. And then I added, let me know if you need any clarifications on that. Well, that was the short email answer. Now, I want to give the longer answer, which will cover some of these things in more detail. And this is from an article that I published in 2009. And I can make those available if anybody wants to take one with you with them, or I can email the article. Either way, if you have somebody you want to send it to, that would be fine, too. But I wrote this article, the original, in 1994, when we were living in Columbia City. So when I wrote the article here, it had been 15 years after the original. Now it's been another 9 years has gone by. But the same question keeps coming up, so we want to deal with this. I'm going to cite information from that article, so if it seems at times to be a little out of date, that's because it is. It was written 24 years ago, originally. It is, the name of the article is called Christian Rock Music Trojan Horse in the Church, and we'll explain that as we go along. Last Saturday, and I wrote this in 1994, there was a family adventure seminar that was being held at a congregation near Columbia City, Indiana. The morning session was profitable, very profitable, for the first hour and a half, as the one conducting the seminar was warning about the entertainment media. And I certainly don't have any objections to that. And the influence we let the entertainment media have in our lives. By the way, this has not changed. It is still the case. In fact, it is probably even worse. I know it's worse than it was all those years ago. So this is a valid point to keep before people's eyes. And it affects us, and especially the lives of our children. The material was excellent and combined with pertinent scriptures. But suddenly it was as if a cold wind swept through the room, which should have chilled everyone present, but unfortunately, apparently, very few were affected by the turn this seminar took. The speaker began to argue passionately for parents to get their children involved in listening to Christian rock music. To be sure, he prefaced it by saying that there was no agenda to get instrumental music into our worship, but that our young people needed a healthy alternative to the seedy rock music on most popular stations. Following is how the presentation worked. He showed a video from Focus on the Family, and that was played, which low-lighted, I don't know how you can call it a highlight, it low-lighted the worst of rock music. The words were flashed on the screen with obscenities partially deleted. I don't particularly care for that practice. While I'm not that I want it printed, I want the whole thing deleted. While a portion of the song was played, selected songs were Me So Horny by Two Live Crew, Cop Killer by Ice-T, and Suicide Solution by Ozzy Osbourne, and a few others that have received over time a great deal of publicity. Now, these were contrasted with on the video with the words of Christian rock music that protested abortion, advocated Christian morality, and exalted Jesus. So, as you can imagine, that made quite a contrast. Obviously, if the only criteria between the two types of music were the words, it's a no-brainer to decide which is better for kids. He continued to sing the praises of Christian rock. Following are a few of his tools of persuasion to get parents and their children involved in the practice. Number one, youth groups in churches of Christ all over the country are promoting Christian rock music for their young people. A group of 50 youths at White's Ferry Road are really into it. What an endorsement. White's Ferry Road has been liberal for years. This is from their own website. Oh, yes, they have people from Duck Dynasty that attend White's Ferry Road. And, in fact, if you remember the movie God Is Not Dead, Duck Dynasty people gave an endorsement to the Christian rock concert, if you can remember that movie. Second argument. A young girl was addicted to sex from the age of 15. She began listening to Christian rock music, and now she's cured. Wow, a testimonial. Third, young people today are going to listen to rock music. You can't stop them. They're going to do it. So why not let them listen to something with wholesome words instead of the profane lyrics? After a few minutes of these exhortations, some of the brethren who were there began to agree with the concept, and some of them were already listening to Christian music along with their children. Since no one seemed to be disposed to offer any objections, I spoke. I want to inject a note of discord into this discussion. Is instrumental music sinful? Now, that's a very easy question. But in the context of the discussion, the speaker surely knew what I meant. But he hedged by saying that instrumental music is not inherently sinful. Well, that's true. So I reworded the question. Is using instrumental music in singing praises to God sin? His answer was something like, we're not advocating instrumental music in worship. Well, that wasn't the question. I countered with, is there a difference between in and out of the assembly? He responded by saying, this is not the time for a discussion of this nature. It was a question and answer period. Aren't you just exchanging one sin for another? I asked. He repeated, this was not the time for such a discussion. Pray tell, when was the time for it? He had just spent 20 minutes advocating as strongly as he knew how to get young people in the Lord's church to listen to Christian rock music. When would have been a better time to discuss this? When would the parents present that day hear a different side than what he had presented, since he chose to silence the opposition? Well, here are some objections that I would make, and they're very similar to what we looked at a few moments ago, only expanded a little bit. Objections to Christian rock music. First of all, the phrase Christian rock is a misnomer. Rock music is secular, Christian songs are spiritual, the two don't really mix. It's as inconsistent as the phrase theistic evolution, which is supernatural naturalism. Does that make any sense? You got an element of supernaturalism in a something that is totally natural. Of course, that doesn't work real well. And notice how, I don't know if you can read the small print, but all of these forms of so-called evolutionary development, we don't have any examples of. And so the guy is saying, well, why should I believe in a God who erases everything? Because we can't find any evidence of it. Number two, God did not authorize the use of mechanical instruments of music in our worship of him. Ephesians 5:19, and we talked about this and Colossians 3:16 last month, are universal statements that are applicable in a number of situations. The singing referred to herein may be done in the assembly or out of it. There's no limitation given. It doesn't say merely in the assembly. The exhortations are not limited to any one context any more than 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 8 is. Paul there said, I desire that men pray everywhere. And by the way, just so that you'll know, it doesn't make any difference. People are ignoring that anyway, by authorizing leadership, authorizing women to lead in prayer. But Paul said, men everywhere. So even when it is clearly spelled out, people ignore it when they want to anyway. Number three, there is no scriptural justification for brethren to conclude that it is wrong to sing with musical accompaniment in the assembly, but all right to use it when we're gathered around a piano at home or a guitar at camp. What makes it right in one situation, but not in the other? Wherever Christians meet, they are to sing and make melody in their hearts to the Lord. If it is unauthorized and therefore sinful for Christians to use musical accompaniment in singing praises and hymns and spiritual songs, can it be right to approve of others doing so? To be more precise, number five, it is a matter of fellowshipping error. Why is it that God's people always seem to want to be like the nations around them? And many today in the Lord's church want to be like the denominations around them. It's the same problem that goes back to 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 20, when Samuel tried to warn Israel, if you have a king, here's what's going to happen. No, but we want a king. And no amount of reason would pacify them. All of the religious denominations are now participating in this newest craze. So it's time our young people joined them. Right, we wouldn't want to be distinctive, would we? A little sarcasm there. This is the bandwagon fallacy, also called ad populum, an appeal to the people. Everybody's doing it. So why shouldn't we be doing it? That's a logical fallacy. Anyone who thinks that our young people can listen to this music, buy it, attend the concert, etc., without it affecting them is incredibly naive. How long will it be before some want to form their own Christian rock band? How much longer yet will it be until they begin to say, we sing these songs with instruments all the time. Why can't we do it in the assembly? Christian rock music is nothing more than the latest form of a Trojan horse in the Lord's church. Now, I'd like to refute the arguments that were made at that workshop. So, number one, the workshop MC appealed for acceptance of this practice by the fact that brethren in various locales are doing it. And again, that's the bandwagon, the ad populum fallacy. What does it matter what some people are doing? The same thing could be said about any false practice. Instrumental music itself crept in little by little. They were brought in to teach young people how to sing during Bible class. And this went on for a period of time, and then they moved the organ or the piano from the basement up to the main auditorium, and it was added to the worship. Once you begin down this road, there's really not a place to be able to stop. Christian rock music got a young girl to quit committing fornication, so we supplant one sin with another. Should we offer to those who have tried LSD marijuana? No, that's probably how they got onto LSD in the first place. We don't use a lesser sin to get somebody off of a sin. Whereas much of rock music is sinful, which is a good reason to turn it off at that point, as well as the television, some of it does no harm. The words are not particularly destructive. Sometimes it's just good, clean fun. We were watching some doo-wop music the other night on, I guess that was PBS, and they had some young people on there in their teens, in their early 20s, And somebody asked him, why are you singing doo-wop? And he said, because the rap music is so filthy, we just can't tolerate it. We don't want to sing it. So they're going back to music that was popular 50 years ago because it's just fun. It's just enjoyable. It actually is entertaining, unlike much of the stuff that we're finding on stations today. But it is always wrong, to add instruments to spiritual songs. One sin is just being exchanged for another that is deemed lesser. We're going to get rid of the filthy lyrics of rock music, but we're going to listen to music with instruments. You're just exchanging one sin for another. Now, what about this argument? Kids will listen to rock music anyway. Well, no, first of all, not all of them do. But even if they did, why not teach them to exercise good judgment rather than give it up altogether? The same can be said of country music. You don't have to give it up altogether, but there are certainly some things that ought not to be repeated, not to be listened to. It is a false dilemma to try to say it's either Two Live Crew or Christian rock. There is quite a bit that falls in between there. And so to make that as that's the only way it is, that's not appropriate. That's not a good argument. And by the way, try this same argument with "will commit fornication." Oh, young people are going to commit fornication. You can't stop them. We need to make sure they're protected. Isn't that what we've heard for years? This is the same type of argument. So it sounds very familiar to hear it in connection with rock music. Now then, another argument was, but it's only entertainment. The purpose is not worship. Well, it has already been argued that the reason for listening to Christian rock is that the words are inspiring and uplifting. Shall we say edifying? Does it admonish and teach? Sounds like a spiritual song, doesn't it? On what basis is Christian rock music authorized? Who will set forth an argument, a valid argument, the conclusion of which is, the Bible authorizes my children and me to listen to Christian rock music? Where's that argument? Who wants to make that argument? Who wants to use biblical principles to come to that conclusion? Now, let's look at some additional observations. To advocate participation on any level with musical accompaniment to spiritual lyrics will open the door to its ultimate acceptance in worship, because the immediate effect is to blur various distinctions. And so we want to be very careful about that. The original article that I wrote concluded it about this point. But there are some other points that we want to make, things that have happened in the meantime. The first of these points is that there are many types of radio stations available in most parts of the country that play various types of music, maybe big band, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and so on. Contemporary, country, easy listening, alternative, or practically anything you want. And if these choices are not enough, you can buy or make compact discs and download all the stuff you want and just carry it with you. So there are means available of getting good, wholesome singing material without having to have a choice of one or the other. It's not the case now. It wasn't actually the case in 1994 either. Second, some of the predictions made in the original article have already come to pass. The fact is that many young people who have grown up listening to Christian rock music have not made the distinction of listening to it and being involved in it. A few years ago, I had a conversation with a young man that I'd known for quite a while who ought to have been taught better and who ought to have known better as a member of the church for all that period of time, but he made a CD which contained his voice and a friend accompanying it with guitar. And he was trying to get it played on, quote, Christian radio stations. How does something like that happen, except in the absence of biblical teaching concerning instrumental music and recommendations of listening to, quote, Christian music? No one needed to be a genius to see that this kind of approval of the practice would play out over a period of time. How does one explain the recent phenomenon of the churches, such as one not far from here? One that a decade or more ago, probably two decades ago, Jeff conducted a seminar at on one of his workshops on science versus evolution and so forth. And since the time he held that workshop, they've added instrumental music right over here on the coast. How does one explain Richland Hills in Fort Worth, Texas, adding instrumental music to some of its services? Not all of them. They still have a cappella singing for the square, for some brethren, but they have instrumental music for those who want to participate in it. The speaker who 15 years ago advocated the acceptance of Christian music made it very clear that he was not trying to introduce instrumental music into worship, and yet that is precisely what has happened in many cases. So that's why we don't want to blur those lines of distinction. That's a reason that we don't want to advocate this on any level. It is also inconsistent today for a person to tell his neighbor, think about this. We don't use musical instruments in our worship. Why not? Well, the Bible doesn't have any authority for it. God didn't authorize it. And then we invite them to go someplace with us and put in a CD of Christian rock music. Now, don't you think they might think that's just a little bit inconsistent on our part after we've just got done explaining why we don't use it? Won't people be amused by our inconsistencies and think we are hypocritical, perhaps? Many brethren have advanced the notion that it is all right to listen to, quote, Christian music because we have no intention of worshiping when we listen to those songs. It's only entertainment. Really? So if we are driving a car and listening, there is no reason to think we would be worshiping when we hear Christian rock music, maybe Amazing Grace, being sung. Then it's no more a thought that that would be worship than it would be listening by the latest song by Drake or Maroon 5. While this point is valid, it is not the only consideration. What was the purpose of the one recording the song that we're listening to? The fact that over the years, those singing religious music have included such titles as hymns of inspiration should tell us that the purpose of the singers is to praise and glorify God, which constitutes worship. If the intention is to praise God, then the use of instruments is wrong. If they were wrong in worshiping God in that manner, why are we correct to buy their CDs and fellowship them in their error? On what basis do we not stand guilty of wrongdoing? Is anyone uncomfortable about calling practices related to sacred things entertainment? Is anybody uncomfortable about calling that entertainment? Can anyone imagine Jesus introducing Peter, Andrew, James, and John as the first gospel quartet to sing religious songs as entertainment? What's wrong with this picture? Did Jesus preach for entertainment also? Perhaps the Pharisees prayed for entertainment. Certainly they probably would have liked applause when they got done from some of the things Jesus said about them. Does anyone see a danger of combining the spiritual and the profane? The dictionary says that to entertain means to amuse. Yes, let's amuse ourselves by listening to people singing their hearts out in praise to God. That's so amusing, isn't it? Singing songs and hymns and spiritual songs with the accompaniment of instruments of music is wrong because it is not authorized in the New Testament, as we talked about last time, Colossians 3:17. This is the same fundamental sin that Nadab and Abihu committed when they offered profane fire before the Lord. And so why would we want to buy those CDs? Why would we want to go against what the Lord says? Why would we want to do it? It is not consistent, and it is not right. Furthermore, it should not be done in the absence of an argument, which clearly authorizes it. No one can set forth that proposition. We should be as careful to follow the teachings of the New Testament and abstain from worldly influences. Well, that's the longer version. We haven't discussed things relating to salvation, but if you know what is required, if you know about faith, repentance, confession, and baptism, and then living for Jesus, we invite you to obey the gospel this evening. If you have another spiritual need, we invite you to let us know that also, while at this time, while we stand and while we sing.